Okay, we'll get back to learning. Fine. So far we've been talking about what's our priority in terms of dealing with mamon hamutal b'safek, right? We don't know what to do with the money. So we say, okay, what do we do? So one option was, right, yehemunach, and one was to say called amgvar, and one to say yachloku, etc. We saw one gisha in the Rishonim was to say, really, Bezdin doesn't want to get involved, right? And the other gisha says, no, Bezdin would like to do yachloku as long as it's viable. So if you can do yachloku, great. And if not, then you have to back out. Why would we ever not do kol d'alim? Why would ever Bezdin get involved if Bezdin could just walk away? So the answer was that tfisa, right, that sometimes you have, someone has possession, shnayim uchsin betalis, and therefore you have to do yachloku, because since they're already being uchsin, they already have possession, so it makes the possibility of letting kol dam gvar impossible. Right, so the question is, what is the uchsin, and what does that possession do legally, right? What status does it have? Why do we care necessarily, etc.? Okay, so the Gemara, which we've mentioned already obliquely, in Baba Kama, right, has the case of you have a cow and a donkey and you're swapping them, and the cow gives birth at some point, or, actually, sorry, the case here is where there's a cow that gored an ox, and then you find a calf next to it. Okay, why is that important? Because if the cow is still pregnant when it gored, so the value of the cow is that of the cow and the obar, right? It's much more valuable as opposed to if it's after it gave birth. So only the cow gored, right? And the obar is just a separate asset that I have. And therefore, you can only, if it's a tam, I only pay up to half the value of the para, is not also of the obar. Okay, all right. So the question is that, you know, if the birth was right before, right after, makes a big difference in terms of how much I'm liable for, right? And also in the opposite case, let's say a cow, ox gores a cow, right? If it gored it when it was worth X amount, when it had the obar in it, so then you're liable for chetzi nezek, right? Of a bigger hunk of nezek than if the vlad is separate. So Sumcha says, so the Mishnah says, right, chayv chatzi nezek min hapara or revi nezek min havlad. Okay, because the you'd be chayv chatzi nezek from the vlad if it was part of the whole package, and if not, nothing, and since the half between nothing, half and nothing is a quarter. Okay, so amar v'yuhud, amar shmuel, zu divrei simchos, that's simchos, da amar mamar mut besafik chokin, ava chacham imomrim zek lagadu b'dena mozim chaveh av harai. Yeah, Rachel, you were about to ask a question?
Yeah, it's not on topic, but we didn't follow this and we just kept going when we were preparing. This is the cow is goring the ox.
There are two cases. One where the cow gores the ox and one where, right, the ox gores the cow.
Yeah, I didn't follow that. Why would the cow that gores and miscarries, I mean, that's on the owner of that cow.
No, it's healthy birth, right?
Oh.
And therefore it's significantly more valuable now. Here's the thing. Sorry, go back a second. Right, you have the cow, you have its offspring.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a pregnant cow and it gored, it was more valuable. And when you pay chetzi nezek from the goring cow, so it's half of 150. After its birth, the cow's worth 100 and the vlad is worth 50. So now it's only half of 100, which would be only 50 instead of 75.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Meaning you have, right, when the cow is pregnant, it's more valuable. And then, right, you'd be able to get chetzi nezek out of 150, which is 75. So you mat your cap on how much you're liable for goes up to 75, which is good for the nezek, right? If it already gave birth, so the cow that's goring is only worth 100, so 50% of chetzi nezek of 100 is only 50. Okay, so Simcha says you would split the difference because there's no way to know, right? Simcha says, look, could be, could not be, right? We have no way of knowing. This is really just a case where they both have a good claim. So what are you going to do? So he says, right? Simcha seems to clearly hold that there's this value of chalukah, right? The moment that we don't know what to do with it, we don't know where it goes, we split, right? That's like our go-to option. We like that. We want to do that when possible, right? If you want to take money away from somebody else, then you need to bring proof. Okay. What I'd say, this is like klal gadol, right? You could just say, in this case, right, there's a mazik, there's a nizak. The nizak wants to get paid, right? If he wants to get paid, he has to bring proof that the mazik is chay. Right? It doesn't sound like it's such a, zekal kadal badin, especially since there's a tovea and a nitva, right? There's someone who's claiming that he's owed money, so he should have to prove it, right? So it's trech. Why do we say klal? What are we saying when we say klal gadol b'din? Dafilu nizak omer bari umazik omer shema hamotzi mechaveh av haraya. So first point is, so if you said, I know it, right? I was there. I, the nizak, the person whose cow got damaged, was there. I saw it happen. And the owner of the mazik says, I wasn't there, but I don't know. Maybe it didn't. Maybe it happened the other way, right? So one of them is bari. I'm saying, I know what happened. I was there. And you're saying, well, I wasn't there, but I don't know. Why should I trust you? Maybe not. Right? So, afilu nizak omer bari, umazak omer shema, hamotzi mechaveh av haraya. Chacham say, even if there's one of them is bari and one of them shema, we still say, hamotzi mechaveh av haraya. Inami, l'chi ha de itmar, hamocher shor lechaveh avinim tzenakhan. Let's say you sell a cow to somebody else, right? Rav amar, hareza mekachtas. Oh, sorry. And you sell a cow. And it turns out to be a nagchan, right? It turns out to be like a crazy, bullfighting boar. And it goes around goring everyone, right? So it's not very useful to have, like, for plowing if it's going to go around goring everyone. So Rav Amar Harei Zemekachtos, it's a Mekachtos. So Shmuel Amar, Yachol Shiyom Adal L'Shchit Machar Tivlach. I didn't sell it to you as a plow cow. I sold it to you as a chow cow, right? Amai. Nechzi igavra dizavin l'radia, igavin dizavin l'nescha. Right? Why don't we just check if it's a person who would normally buy a cow for plowing or for chowing? Answer is lo tzricha, the gavra dizavin l'ha ulaha. He's a guy who does both, right? He's a big businessman. He buys chow cows and plow cows. Because he has so many plow cows, he's rich enough that he also buys chow cows. Okay. Right? If I pay, the amount that you would pay for a plow cow, right? Then clearly I bought it for a plow cow, not a chow cow, because chow cows are cheaper than plow cows. Lo tzricha de okir bisra v'kai b'dmei radia. Right? Meat got so expensive that a chow cow is just as valuable as a plow cow. Okay, so then Amri ileka. Okay, so then if it's the same value, so why doesn't he just like take the cow, right, the chow cow, in payment for the money, right, the mekachtos that he was cheated out of his plow cow? The Amri Ichi, right, Mimri Rishavtach Pairi Afra. Basically, if you can get paid, then you can get paid and then take whatever you can get because you never know when your debtors are going to be able to pay. Lo tzricha di ika l'shtalu meimine. Right? Rav Amar hariza mekachtos, zo basa ruba. L'ruba di inchi l'rad Yehudi zavni. Oh, sorry, one second. Ika l'shtalu meimine means that the guy still has cash. Right? The person who sold the cow still has the cash on hand. Right? So it's always better to have cash than to have, random assets that you have to dispose of somehow. So Rav says, "Hareza mekachtos zil basa ruba, the ruba de inchi l'rad Yehudi zavni." Says, "Well, let's go after the rove, and rove's people buy plow cows, not chow cows." Ushmuel amar yachal shiyomer lo l'shchita machar tivlach velo azlina basa ruba. We don't go after the rove. Why? Ki azlina basa ruba biisura aval b'mamona lo azlina basa ruba ela hamotzi mechavel avharah. Now Shmuel says, Rav says that when you have a rove, when you have a majority. So even by mammon, you could rely on the majority, right? But Shmuel says, by mammon, we don't follow the rove, right? By Yisrael Hetter, by Kashrus, by all these other things, right? We always follow the rove. But here, we don't follow the rove. Why? Because that's a rule in Isser, right? It's like, you know, in terms of how you should act towards God, right, and his commandments, he says, oh, you know, get to follow the rov. That's like the reasonable approach. Aval b'mamona lo azlinan bater ruba, ela hamotzi mechaver alav harai. Right? You have to bring proof. It's not good enough for it to be the preponderance of the evidence or that, right, or the preponderance of people's conduct. It has to, you have to actually bring proof. Tanya namihachi, shosh nagachas para nimtza ugu b'tzida v'inu yodua im adshalo nagcha yalda im ish nagcha yalda misham chati nezak para v'in et vlad divrei sumchos chamur omrim motzim mechavel av harai. Okay, so what's the makor? What's the legal basis for this? Okay, now, right, Rav says that we would follow a rov. So that sounds like, you know, we have the general solutions to cases where we don't know what's going on. So Simcha says, oh, well, if we don't know, Rav says, even though we say Motzim Mechavel of Haraya, if you have a rov, so that kind of, that determine, right, that helps us understand what the Messias is. Right? The rov is generally considered to be good, not proof that something is, but how we should approach things, what we can assume, right? A rov says we can treat it as if, right, the majority is what matters. So why can't we do that by Hamotz Mechavel Faraya? So, Amar of Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, what's the basis of Hamotz Mechavel Faraya? Minan la Hamotz Mechavel Faraya, shenemar, mi bal dvarim yigash alehem, yigash yagish raya alehem. So it says, okay, when it comes to Bezdin, when it comes to claiming money from the courts, whoever is the claimant needs to go to the judges. Yagish raya alehem. He needs to bring proof to the judges, right? So in terms of the people, right, I think I would argue like this. People are allowed to follow the rov, right? Even Bezdin's allowed to follow the rov in determining, right, what our course of conduct should be. But when it comes to a claim in court that you want to take money from somebody else, the court, right, mi bal dvarim yagish alehem. Whoever is bringing the other person to court needs to bring actual proof, right? Partially, I think, we could say is because in order for us to have a court case, right, there's a status quo. There's whatever the reality is. And then we're asking Bezdin to intervene, right? We're having Bezdin come in and change something, right? Because, right, it's like, mi bal dvarim yagish alehem. Whoever is the claimant has to goes to the court and then, right, brings it before the court for the court to intervene and change reality or intercede on their behalf in the current status quo. And in order for Bezdin to come in and change things, right, yagish raya alehem, you need to bring them proof. Okay, what could Simcha say back to that? Let's keep that in mind. Well, I'll elaborate that in a moment. So, Matkafla Ravashi. Ravashi objects. Ha lamali kra. He says, I don't need a pasuk. You don't need a pasuk for Hamotzi Mechavel Haraya. Svarahu, it's pashut svara. Right? Dikaivle keiva azul lebeyasya. Right? The person who's in pain is the one who goes to the doctor. Right? You don't need to tell me that the person who wants something to be done, right, is the one who has to bring proof, who has to take action. And I think it's very similar in that he's saying, right, in order for, if you want to be motzi, so you need to bring a raya, because you want to do something, right? You need, the person who's in pain, the person who wants to change the status quo, right, needs to get up and do something. And that something needs to be bringing proof, because otherwise, why would we listen to it? Now, in both of these, potentially, we'll get to it further in a second, how extreme would we take this klal of Hamotzi Mechaver Alav Haraya? If you hold like Rav Ashi, right, that it's a ksvara of, you know, the person in pain, the person who wants to change the status quo is the one who needs to bring proof. So then, let's say there's already jarred the mamona. Let's say it's already mamon hamutu besafek. Now, in the case in the Mishnah, or one of them actually owns the cow and one of them is, right, is claiming damages, there it is. There's still a motzi mechaver alav haraya, right? And that's what the Chachamim are going to say. Okay, this guy wants to get money, and therefore we have to prove it. You have to bring proof. Right? Even though, although, again, Sumchus can argue back, yeah, but here there's already Nezek, right? I know that this cow gored this ox. The question is how valuable the cow was at the time, right? There's this new, calf running around, which we didn't know about, which didn't exist a minute ago. So was that part of the story or not? So there it's already, kind of in the picture. But we already know, mi bal dvarim yigash elohem, we're already at the Be'asya, right? Both of them already need to be there. Both of them are already, it's clear that there's Nezek already. And the question exactly is how much, right? Which is Sumchus's counter-argument. Is it Mamon Buta Pasafek, but is Chulkin when we already know that there's Nezek? We already know that there's something going on. The question is how much? It's a question of extent. Right, to initiate proceedings, Simchus is moda that you would need hamotzi mechavel alfarayim. Okay, So the classic case of Simchus though is the case of machlif shor bechamor, which is also similar. One of them owns the shor, one of them owns the chamor, right? And we don't know, right, when the added value came about, right? Let's say of the oba. Of the Vlad, sorry. So again, both have ownership over it. Neither of them is really a motzi because there's this like obar running around and we just don't know who it belongs to. It could belong to A, it could belong to B. Neither of them have possession over it. What about them? Okay, now that's another interesting question, right? Because if none of them have any possession whatsoever, so then maybe. Right? Maybe we can't even say, oh, there's a hamotzi mechavel alfaraya, because who's the motzi? Okay. If we go with Rav Shmuel bar Nachmini, so one second, right? Then we have a pasuk, so maybe that makes it more extreme, more powerful. And, right, the point, mi ba dvar mi yigash alehem, yagish raya alehem, is also saying that it's not just that in order for us to do something, if you want to change something, you need to go ahead and do something. Right, we're going a step beyond that. We're saying that in order for Beis Din to act, mi bal dvarim yagish elehem, yagish raya elehem, you need to bring proof for Beis Din, right? And then a rove might not be good enough, right? In the case of Rav Ashi, it's not so surprising. You say, oh, it's a svara, kaiv le kaiv azul be'asya, right? But what counts as ground, as something that is convincing, isn't necessarily change. He's saying, well, you want to change things, you got to do something yourself, right? So you want to be motzi mechavero alav harayim. But the quality of the raya isn't really part of that svara. Right? He's saying, if you want change, you got to do it yourself. Well, Shmuel bar Nachmini is saying, if you want Beis Din to do something, right, you need to bring proof to them. In which case, a rove might not be good enough. If it's just about the svara of whoever wants change needs to has the obligation to, to make it happen. So then maybe rove counts. Okay. Yeah, Tehila, you had a question?
Yeah. I'm just wondering how the Nizak Omer Bari Umazik Omer Shema fits into the picture, or if it doesn't, because we're trying to figure out, like, it's like for Kol Gadol Badin, it seemed to introduce this as a segue into the scene, but then the chiddush of the scene seems to be that we don't follow Azlina and Batar Ruba.
So also, meaning Rav definitely seemed to imply, thinks that it does, right? Shmuel thinks that no, Kol Gadol Badin means even then, right? So the first point is what's the Kol Gadol Badin, right? And it says one option is even Bari Vashem, right? Or maybe it's even to say again, and that well,
the Hava Amina for Bari Vashema.
You have two people, right? The guy owns the cow, the guy owns the ox. The guy who's damaged, who gets the damagee, says, I saw what happened, right? And this is what happened. And the mazik, right, the owner of the damager, says, oh, I don't know. Right? Does his claim of I don't know, right? The cow gore docs, right? And the person who's damaged says, I saw what happened. I was there. Right? So do we say, well, okay, he saw what was there. At the very least, you know, well, he's saying I know. He's saying I don't know. So we should follow the person who actually claims to have knowledge. Right? I'm not saying that the damager isn't saying, oh, I know that I'm pater. He's saying, oh, yeah, I really might be chayev. I don't know. And the fact that he doesn't know, at the end of the day, doesn't help him. It's good enough to be poter. Okay. Then we go a step further, but you're right, because the chisaron there is like, okay, but he's still the claimant, right? He's still the one trying to get money, so we're going to trust him. But in the case of Rov, then we have objective reasons to trust him, right?
That would be because of Rove. If you're going to rely on Rove, wouldn't you use Rove regardless of whether it means like his Bari or Shema?
Yeah, but I'm saying Bari Vishema is worse than Rove.
Worse, right? In what sense?
Well, it's worse in the sense that the person who's claiming Bari isn't really someone who we believe necessarily, right? Because he's the claimant. In the case of Rove, we have it's objective evidence.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter that much for the big picture, but I don't understand what that phrase is doing there, because I don't understand what the Hava Amin would be. I don't understand why that, like, plays a role if we're bringing Rove into the equation. Like, it just seems to be sitting there.
What? Which one?
The Nizak Omer Bari V'Mazik Omer Shema.
No, according to Rav, that's the point, right? Because Rav thinks we would follow Rove.
But Rove would come into play regardless of whether we have Bari Shema or not.
No, because Rav says, meaning what's the Klal Gadol B'Din saying? So Rav must think that Klal Gadol B'Din means that even Bari against the Shema. Right? Because Rav thinks that we would follow a Rove. According to Shmuel, right, we could even be saying, Zeh Klal Gadol B'Din, Hamotzi Mechaveh Al Haraya, given even against the Rove.
Sorry, can you clarify the connection between Bari and Shema and Rove?
So they're two different points. I mean, first, the Gemara says like this, right? Chachamim say, Zeh Klal Gadol B'Din, Hamotzi Mechaveh Al Haraya. Then the Gemara says, well, why do we say Zeh Klal Gadol B'Din? Right? So the answer is like this. In the case in the Mishnah that we've talked about until now, we're talking about we have a safek, right? We just don't know. And therefore, Simcha says, Mamon Multiple Safek Chalkin, because it's Drar de Mamona, which we'll talk about. Right, they both have a claim because there's actually a nezek. We see, right, we know that the cow gored the ox. The only question is on the exact quantities, right? So then it's those quantities are besafek. The actual fact that there's a claim, you know, is clear. And then where's chokin? Chachamim say no, right? Since this is besafek, we're not hamotz mechavel of harayim. Just because it's mamon hamotz besafek. Right, we're not going to say Cholkin, we're going to say Hamotzi Mechaveh of Harayim. So then the Gemara says, okay, well, they said, why is it saying Zeh Klal Gadol B'Din? That implies that it's like not just about this case, it's about, you know, all cases, right? They're saying this is the rule. This is like our go-to rule. Okay, why is it the go-to rule? Like what other cases other than Mamon Hamotzi B'Safek can you think of that you'd say, oh, Hamotzi Mechaveh of Harayim, you know, even though you wouldn't necessarily have thought that. Right, or wouldn't have been obvious. So the first option is, let's say, a case of Bari Vishema. One of them says, I know 100% this is what happened. Right? The other person says, I don't know. Right? I don't know. Let's say, you know, there's a car. One car rear-ends the other. And the driver of the car who got rear-ended says, you know, you rear-ended me? And another guy's like, I don't know, maybe you stopped short. And he's like, I didn't stop short. And he's like, I don't know, but maybe you did. Now, first of all, if a driver says that, it's very sketchy because why does he not even know? Clearly he wasn't paying attention to the road, right? And in common law, we would definitely be mechayev him because we always assume the person who rear-ended the other guys is liable. But the point here is like, okay, I know I saw it, right? I saw your dog bite my dog. And you have a dog, right, who's a crazy dog who goes around biting people. But you're like, oh, I don't know. I don't see it. Why not? Because you let your dog off your leash and you were looking the other way, right? But you're like, I don't know. I didn't say it. My eyes were closed at the time. Maybe it was, maybe not. Right? Well, in this case, it's like, all right, I know I did, but I don't know how much. So I know 100% of your cow gored my ox, right? And I saw it, and I'm telling you that it was before I gave birth, and therefore, right, your chayiv, you know, half of 150. And you're saying, well, I don't know. So why don't we say, trust the guy, because he says he knows. The other guy says he has no idea. And we know that the guy that this happened. Then it don't, right? We don't, doesn't matter. Hamotzi mechavel faraya. If you want to, you're just, I think you, we're just very used to the idea of hamotzi mechavel faraya. So we're like, well, I don't care that one of them is bari and one of them shema, right? Even if the other guy was like, has no idea what's going on or whatever, you have to bring proof. Otherwise, you have no claim. That's chiddush, right? Because one of them is not, if you say, if I say you're chayiv, you could say the very fact that I'm making a claim against you requires you to defend yourself, right? Otherwise, it's no contest, and then you're chayiv. Right? The answer is no. Hamotzi mechavel faraya, and I need to prove that you owe me money. It's not good enough for that I made a claim. It's not even good enough that my claim has merit, right? Because it's a case where I know that we know that your cow gored my ox. The question is, right, how much was your cow worth at the time of Nezek? So I definitely have merit, right? And you're saying Shema, you're basically claiming no contest almost on my claim that it was at the, you know, on the more valuable end of the spectrum. Nonetheless, we'll still say Hamotzi mechavel faraya. That's still a chiddush. We're used to that chiddush, but that's still a chiddush, right? Okay, that's number one. Then the Gemara goes on, says Inami. Right, it could also be to tell you that by b'mamon lo azlina basaruba because hamotzi mechavel faraya. Even against a rove, we would still say hamotzi mechavel faraya. Now that's a bigger chiddush because it's one thing to say that we won't trust the nizak to claim, right, that he's owed more. It's another thing to say that we won't accept a rove, right, which is good objective evidence, right? Now, according to Rav, though, we would accept a rove, in which case the Klal Gadol is talking about Bari V'Shev. Good? Yeah? With me? Okay, great. Fine. Then we just had two explanations of where we get the idea of Hamotzi mechavel faraya from. One is from a pasuk, right? The pasuk says that there are courts, and how do courts work? Mi bal dvarim yigash aleihem, right? Whoever has a claim will go before them, right? Yagish raya aleihem, and bring a proof before the courts, right? And therefore, you need to bring proof when you go to the court. The court doesn't, you know, doesn't work based on your, you know, your opinions and you know, and your imprecations. It's, you got to bring proof. And otherwise, you just have no standing before the court. Yeah. One second. So the other option, Rabashi says, no, it's a svara, right? You want to make change. You want to say, oh, I want my money back, right? And this guy has my money and I want him to give back. I want the ills that are ailing me to be addressed. So it's on you to go to the doctor. It's on you to go to the court and prove it and make and bring about the necessary changes. Yeah. Rochel.
I just wanted to clarify that the person who, in the Bari, and I mean in general also, the Bari and the not Bari situation, the damager was the one who was holding the animals, or that doesn't factor in? Because I'm trying to figure out like the ugh.
So the damager is still in possession, he has ownership over
in possession
of the cow and and the calf. Yeah, they're his.
Okay.
Yeah, that's important. Because if they were of dubious ownership, so then maybe we would not say Hamotzi mechavel faraya, because who's the motzi, right? Now, right. A bigger chiddush, right? So first of all, we're saying there's the power of possession applies even when there's a suffix. Even one says, I know, and the other says, I don't know, right? And even against the rove, according to Shmuel. Another case of Hamotzi mechavel faraya, so you have a house, okay? And an apartment on top of it. And it falls down, okay? So the rocks, the bricks, belong to both of them, right? Because it was a two-family house, you know, fell down. So all the building materials belong to the two of them. Okay, so you calculate out how many bricks each person is supposed to get. If someone recognizes ones that are his, he can take them. Okay. Right? Did it fall over? Did it just collapse downwards? And then you kind of try to figure out which parts are part of each person's, you know, part of their structure. Wait a second. If you can figure out which one, what belongs to who, why are we cholek? We should just figure it out. Nechsi, ibe chavata nafil, alaisa itbor, ibe chavasa nafil, tataisa itbor. Okay, so it fell at night. So you couldn't see how the building fell over, right? Did it fall over? Did it just collapse? And then you can't tell which bricks belong to who. Okay, lechzina betafra, ode peninu, right? That, vlechzi man peninu vleshaile. So someone moved them. Okay, well, we just ask whoever moved it. The Peninu Bnei Rosh Hashanah Vazalam. Okay, what happened? Like Bnei Rosh Hashanah, like the public, you know, saw this like disaster. You know, everyone got together. It's very inspiring. Everyone got together and like, you know, helped clean up the mess. And then everyone went back to their business. Okay, lichzi brishus man yasvan. The heavy idach hamotzim mechavel al haraya. So why don't we just see where the bricks are sitting and whoever, right? Whoever's part of the property the bricks are sitting in should be the person in possession. The other person should be the motzi, and a motzi mechavel of haraya. So the answer is lo tzuichan the yasvan b'chatzah de travayos in a shared courtyard, which they both have equal ownership of. Inami b'rshus rabim b'seim ashutin b'chiyai gavne lo kav tiyad. Why is this a bigger chiddush? Yeah, Tehila.
Because the fact that it's in his reshut doesn't indicate that it's his. It just happens to have fallen into his land, and we still use Mazim Chavar al Daraya.
Exactly. We know the bricks belong to both of them, and we know that they need to split it, right? We know that there's a jumble of bricks. Half belong to one, half belong to the other, that we have no way to know whose is whose, right? The doubt, the suffix, really predates the possession, right? And they still need to divide it. So why should one of them have the upper hand on the bricks because they're in his chatzer when anyways they need to divide this pile of bricks even though it's in his chatzer, right? Unless we're saying, so when it comes to the case of the mazik, where the guy actually wants to extract money that he doesn't necessarily own, right, from the owner of the cow, so I understand, okay, well, it's the owner of the cow owns the stuff. I want to take that money away from him. So Alav Aviraya. But here we're getting a step beyond that, and we're saying, no, right? Just because it's in my possession, that gives me the upper hand. Okay, so what's that? Right, just another Gemara, our Gemara again, about Hamotzi Mechavel of Haraya. All right, so what this definitely does do for us is say that possession matters, right? Even when it doesn't come on the basis of, you know, a presumption of ownership or even as a reflection of previous ownership. Because the rocks that are, the bricks that are in his property, I couldn't say like this. I could say, oh, he already owns it, right? Or I could say like, you know, he owns it and he might not own it anymore, but he did. But here, what I'm saying is, even though I know that he doesn't own it, and I know that he's going to have to, and not only do I know that he doesn't own it, or he doesn't own half of it, right? And he's going to have to split it, right? But the fact that he already has possession gives him the upper hand. Our Gemara on Daf Gimel, when we're talking about the Shavua, it says, Halcha kivan de tafis anansadi demai de tafis haidi dehu. My de tafis haidi dehu. And what someone's holding on to is proof that it belongs to them. Okay? Now that assumes that it proves that they own it, right? Which is definitely not what was going on in the Gemara Ibab Mitzian Kuftez Zayin. Right? Here, what we're saying is that possession is proof that he really owns it. Not that it just gives you the upper hand, even though we know that you don't own it and that we're going to take it away, half of it away from you. Okay? It's another, a very interesting Gemara. Amr of Yehuda, Ra'u shehitman kelim takas kanafal v'yatza, v'amr l'kuchanein b'yad. The guy goes into his friend's house, comes out, they two agents see him tucking, you know, some object under his cloak, and he says, "Oh, I bought them." He's not believed. Only though, if it's like a owner or a house owner who doesn't normally sell his kelim. And it's only if it's something that's weird for him to be like, you know, tucking away. I don't know, let's say like wouldn't be weird for someone to try to hide the fact that he just bought, you know, I don't know, some sort of whatever object that something expensive, I don't know, that like you don't want other people to know that you have or something like that. That doesn't sound so good. He's like sneaking out with like the guy's gold candlesticks and tucking it under his cloak. But I don't know. Let's say it's like, oh, the Star Wars Christmas special. Oh, right? You don't want anyone to know that you're buying the Star Wars Christmas special, right? Because that's just embarrassing. Like George Lucas apparently tried to have them all destroyed. On the other hand, right, you know, that's just something interesting sort of thing to have possession of. So v'she'ein darkan hat minami lo amran ela inish delo tzniya. Well, inish de tzniya hainu orchei. It's like, oh, someone who's a very private person, even if it's just like, you know, I don't know, a regular book, borrowing the Lord of the Rings, but he's just like, I don't know, he's like, he's a ram in yeshiva somewhere. He doesn't want everyone to know he's reading he's watching Lord of the Rings. So he hides the DVDs under his cloak. So hainu orchei, right? He's, you know, he doesn't want everyone to know what he's up to. So then we would not trust the Edim, and he would not be considered, we wouldn't assume that he's a ganav. Okay, and that's only if the owner, right, or the Baal Bayis says that I lent them to him, and this guy says, no, I bought them. Okay, the guy walks out of his friend's house, right, he's a normal guy, out of his friend's house who's not, doesn't, isn't expected to be selling his possessions. And he tucks his copy of his friend's copy of Lord of the Rings under his cloak. And he's a regular Joe, so there's no reason for him to hide it. So then, right, if the guy claims that this suspicious fellow, stole it, then he's not believed. Even though we have Edim that he acted sketchy, right, and snuck out of the guy's house with his copy of Lord of the Rings. Why? Because achzuke inchi beganvi, right, lo machzikina. We don't believe him to say, oh, that somebody's a thief, right? We don't trust people to claim that other people are thieves. Unless, right, it's something that is not normally lent, and then the guy says, oh, I lent it. So he'd be neman to say that, oh, he bought it, because if there are certain things you just wouldn't lend out. Like either you'd sell it to someone or not sell it, but you wouldn't lend it to someone. I don't know, like a toothbrush. You don't lend someone a toothbrush. You can give them a toothbrush, but you can't lend them one. Or you shouldn't. Okay, what's going on here? Right? It seems like even though this guy's acting very sketchy, the fact that he's taking this, right, and our options for explaining his possession is to say, well, either he owns it or he stole it. Right? So we don't want to say that he stole it, because then we're saying that this guy's a ganav. And that goes, achzuke inchi began bilo machzikin. We assume that people, right, there was this idea of a cheskas kashras, that people are assumed to be decent people unless proven otherwise. So in order to say that this guy's a thief, we have to go against his cheskas kashras. Okay? And we don't want to do that, because he has a cheskas kashras. That's a legal status that you would have to undermine. Okay. So, Hamotzi Mechelel of Haraya, right? We have so far that Olav Haraya is a din in Bezdin, right? Hamotzi Mechelel, Zek Klal Gadol, Hamotzi Mechelel of Haraya, because Bal Dvarim Yigash Alehem, and needs to bring proof. And in order for us to say that there's an actual claim that the court can act upon, you have to bring proof. Or, right, we saw in the Gemara in the end of Bava Metzia, that it's a status quo din, right? All change requires effort or evidence, right? Just like, you know, the guy with the toothache needs to go to the dentist. So whoever, you know, you want to make change the status quo, you have to You have to prove it, regardless of whether or not there's any evidence or any reason to believe that in the ownership, the possessor is the owner, right? Like in the case of the bias valium. We also saw that there's a chazak of mashabiyado is shalow, of anan sadi that it's shalow, and the idea that we assume that what's in his hand actually belongs to him, because we're maniach, we assume that people aren't ganavim, right? That people have a chazkas kashrus. Okay. Now, those two things, I think, are really two different concepts, right? They're both masquerading under the rule, the idea of Hamotzi Mechavel Faraya. Really, those are two separate things, right? One of which says that if you have possession, we assume that you own it. And one says that if you have possession, we won't take it from you, right? Until proven other, until proof is provided, right? One is potentially a din in Bezdin, right? And a din in the maintaining the status quo. That says Hamotzi Mechavel Faraya. You need to prove it. Right? It doesn't prove that it belongs to this guy, but in order for you to get it, you need to bring proof. In order for Bezdin to get involved, you need to bring proof. The other says, because he has possession, right? Possession is 10/10 of the law. A law, it proves that he owns it. Right? Normally, we say possession is 9/10 of the law, and the fact that you have it means that you get to keep it until proven otherwise. Here, right? Anan Sadi Shizashalau says, not only does he get to keep it, but we know that it's his, and we'll enforce that it's his. Okay? That's basically a non-sadi on the chefsa. Also, on the gavra, when we say we want to be machzik this person as a ganav, we can't go against his cheskas kashras. So his cheskas kashras says that unless we can prove that he's a thief, he's presumed to be a decent guy. And therefore, if he has an object and he's claiming that it's his, unless we know that he's a thief, we have to presume that it belongs to him, right? He's presumed to be a decent guy. He's claiming that it's his, right? Otherwise, if he's lying, then he's a thief. So, right, our chazaka, our cheskas kashra says that he's you know, not a thief. Okay, what's the basis? Yeah, sorry, Rachel.
Oh, no. So what I thought was an interesting distinction is that the burden of proof can be in the claimant, but the possession can still be proof that you stole it, let's say. So, like, the fact that he owns it, it means that the burden of proof isn't on him, but his ownership could be, like, very easily. I don't know. I just thought of it. Like, let's say you stole from a company, you stole confidential things or whatever, proprietary. Mm-hmm. And so it's not on, I'm saying it's obviously on the company, their claimants, to find some proof. But your ownership of it shows that you stole it because you're not them.
Yeah,
not your ownership.
If we knew that you, for example, let's say you took something, right? Let's say we caught you with something that, right. I don't know. Let's say something that requires a shtar and sale, right? Like a car, right? Cars are a great example. Ownership of cars is tracked through contracts, right? Through, you know, not a deed, but whatever, registration, right? You can't own the car unless you have the registration. So if I have your car and I claim it's mine, right? But the registration, it's still licensed to you. So then clearly I'm a thief. Right? That's proof because I have a stolen object, right? And I know that I didn't buy the car, because if I did, I would have to have changed, right? We have to exchange the registration. So that's a good example of something that you can't sell, that, you know, you can prove whether or not you sold it. But let's say it's a pen, right? A pen, how do you sell a pen? You give someone like a dollar and then they give you a pen. Right? So how do you prove whether or not the guy actually bought it or you gave them? So the answer is, we just assume whoever has possession of the pen is the owner of the pen, right? We don't require like documents to prove ownership. So then let's say I see, you know, I go into someone's office, right? And then I come out and I'm tucking a pen into my pocket. So that's our case. So do we say, right, that Right. And you say, oh, you lent me the pen. And I say, no, I bought the pen. Right. Then I'm not believed if it's a case where you never give up your pens. Right. You're one of those people who never, ever gives away pens. You like have 10 pens at every test. You like sit down at your table and you actually have like a ton of pens available. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Am I hearable? Okay. So, yeah, right? So then the presumption is that until you have to prove that the guy's a gana. And part of the reason why you have to prove that is because he has a cheskas kashrus and you're undermining that chazaka. Okay? So we have is there's stuff about what I have in my hand belongs to me. And there's stuff that says what I have in my hand, I get to keep until proven otherwise. Right? One is about really maintaining the status quo or about Beis Din, right? And the standards that Beis Din uses. And the other is about establishing ownership in a positive sense, right? This side is Chazaka Masha Biyado Shalal. It's a positive rule, which says that I own it, right? Olav Haraya is a negative rule that says, barring proof, we maintain the status quo. Right? Those are two very different things. Okay. How does Hamotzi Mechavel Olav Haraya actually work? Right, what's the logical basis of this? So the Kovet Shiurim says, Hinei hadam rina chazaka komasha biyada hu shalo, hatam hu detfisato muchachas dimeayin ba liyado, kivan dachzuke inchi began bilo machzikinan. Right, we assume that what someone possesses is his. Why? Only because, right? We don't assume that people are thieves, and in order to not assume that people are thieves, we have to assume that what they have is theirs and not stolen. Right. So since people have a cheskas kashrus, then we have to assume that what they have in their possession got there by legitimate means. V'hicha deleika hochacha me'atfisa higon begodros. Oh, but well, let's say possession doesn't prove that he's wouldn't assume that he's a thief. Okay, this is a good enough, Kamina. Let's say I have an object which possession of doesn't imply that I either bought it or stole it. Okay, what two types of objects are that like that? Godros, which are walkies, possessions that move by themselves, like a sheep, right? You have a sheep or a dog, it can walk by itself, which means it can have gone out of your house and into his house all by itself. So the fact that he has possession doesn't leave me with only two options of he stole it or he bought it, because it could be he did neither and my dog just walked into his living room. And he's like, oh, nice doggy. And the doggy's happy, right? So that doesn't prove that it's his. Or dvar masuim lahashu lahaskir, if it's something that I normally would lend out, right? Possession thereof doesn't prove that you either bought it or stole it. And since we can't assume that you stole it because you have a cheskas kashrus, so we assume that you bought it because maybe you just borrowed it, right? There, lo mahani atfisaso, demukminan le becheskas marakama. And those cases, says like the Kovet Shiurim, v'chanan v'asuman, that yeah, in a chanami, in those cases, we assume that it still belongs to the marakama, right? We assume that it belongs to the original owner. So, I'm trying to think of a good example, but what's like a thing that you normally lend to people? Like books? It's like a book, right? There's a book, it has my name in it. I lent it to someone. Now, right? Do we say, oh, the fact that the person has possession of it prove that it's theirs? That's or no, right? Has my name in it, right? I'm the marakama. It's a davar ha'asui lahashu lahaskir. So it doesn't prove that it's yours, right? And it's presumed to still be mine. Okay? Ubidina demochsak incha klau bin tvisato muchachas alav olo. Daha besavik bechoros amrina namotz mechavel avaraya. Says, but there's a separate din of whether or not of Hamotzi Mechav of Haraya, right? Even when it doesn't prove anything, because the din of a Muchzak, it's not because it proves what happened, but rather, if there's a Suffik, then we do nothing. We leave it where it is. Why? Because case of a Bechor, where we don't know whether or not this animal is a Bechor. If it's a Bechor, it belongs to the Kohen. If not, it belongs to the original owner, right? So in that case, there's no proof that the original owner has possession because otherwise he stole it, because that's just how Bechors are, right? Your sheep gives birth to its Bechor. That Bechor is chayiv in, you know, to be given to a Kohen, but it's a Suffolk Bechor for whatever reason. So there's no reason, or it doesn't prove that it's mine because otherwise I stole it. I was born to my sheep. But Hamotzi Mechav of Haraya, you still need to bring proof. Okay. Okay. The idea of the muchzak, that whoever has possession, is only a relevant concept when there's drar de mamona, and both sides have like a tfisas mamon, right? And it's mutu b'safek, and then we say we leave it with the status quo of whoever has possession. Does that only works, right? If Bezdin, right, sees the situation and the situation is inherently one which leads us to be mesupak about who owns it. Right? But so there are two dinim, says Rav Chanan Wasserman. There's a din of Hamotzi Mechav of Haraya that we just leave it with whoever is machzik it, whoever is literally holding on to it. That only works, he says, if there's drarad mamona. Okay? It only works if there's like a real reason for us to believe before they came to Bezdin, before they started making claims, but based on just like the objective, nonverbal content of the situation, that this money could belong to either of them. In that case, absent proof, Hamotzi Mechav of Haraya. That is about maintaining the status quo. There's a separate thing that says that Hamotzi, that Chazaka Kol Ma'aseh B'yado Shelo, that there's a proof in possession, because otherwise he's a thief. And we can't assume that he's a thief, right? Because he has cheskes kashrus, and therefore we assume that he got it by appropriate means. Okay? Those are two separate things. And you could have one without the other. Right? So, for example, if there's no drar de mamona, we wouldn't say that possession rules, but we would say that, well, it could still prove that he owns it. Right? So in the case of, let's say, a Safik Bechor, or it might belong to you, it might belong to the Kohen. So there, there's no proof that it's yours. But since there's Jarad Mamona, since there's an objective suffix as to who the money belongs to, so we'll leave it in possession of whoever has it. Right? In the case of the guy who walks, you know, snuck out of the other guy's house and tucked it under his shirt, so there, it's, there's no drar de mamona, but there is, right, a chazaka, achzuki ein shebegan v'lo machzikinan, and therefore we presume that it actually belongs to him. That's like anan tzad yishu v'al shela. It's presuming that it's his. Okay. The Shar Mishpat, the Nuri Behuta's father-in-law, he says, b'emes yotir nire, the tama chazaka d'chol ma'ad shetach z'yadu shela, tama d'kan nimtza kan haya. It's not a chazaka on the gavra, that the gavra is a kosher gavra. It's a chazaka on the cheftza, that kan nimtza kan haya. Here it is, right? So it's presumed to have always been here, right? It's a chazaka dehashta. It's the idea that if we find something in a certain state, it can be presumed to have always been in that state. until proven otherwise. Right? We assume by default, as a chazaka, that things are, right? Either the things are the way they are, and they maintain that state until proven otherwise. We assume that's the chazaka de meikara. We assume things haven't changed until proven otherwise. We also assume that things have been the way they are, right? Unless you can prove to me that, or show me that they changed. So kanha nimsa, it's been found here in this guy's possession. Kanhaya, presumably it's always been here. Right? Now, that's a saying, right? That's a chazaka, but not about the gavra, but about the chefta. Okay? Okay. A third option that comes up in the Kovet Shirim moves away from this idea of chazaka as we have these ways of viewing the world that allow us to make certain assumptions, either about people, right? People are decent people until proven otherwise, so we assume that the possessions they have are theirs and haven't been stolen, or that we just assume that, you know, an object has, it's the law of conservation of momentum, right? The Shaar Mishpat's argument is the law of conservation of momentum, right? An object in motion remains in motion. An object that is static, right, will remain not in motion until some force comes and acts upon it. Right? In the absence of any known force, we presume that the object has been in the state, right, for, you know, however long, right? We're assuming the conservation of, the conservation of possession. Kovet Shirim adds a new option, which is, wait a second, maybe, right? It's not that we know what's going on, right? It says, Kilu anu yodin sheish l'shem chelek ba, kivin dim mikoch shnei mifka, skim. Okay. V'nira mizeh. Daha chazaka komashu tachas yad adam hu shalo, inu mitam umdina uberur shekenu. It's not that we actually think that we can figure it out, that, oh, it belongs to him. Ela shedavar torahu she'in tzrichem lachos shema eino shalav. Okay? It's not that we know that it's his, or we can presume that it's his. Or I would say, not that we can deduce that it's his. Right? Rather what? Dugmal zeke in din chazaka b'yisurin eino mivareras hamaisa mikol makom hu din v'adai. Umikol makom hu din v'adai. It doesn't tell us, it doesn't tell us what actually happened. We don't know what happened. What do we know? We know how to act. Okay? That's the idea, right? Chazaka komasha tachaz yad adam shalo, eino mitam umdino beiror shekin. We don't know what actually happened. But we know how to act. Bechazaka zu leinim mamon af sheham maisa eino mivareras lanu, mikomakom hudin vada. We know that it belongs to him. What does that mean? The im lo kein lo shafnis kai l'choberia, right? Life would become impossible, right? No one could survive. Shkol echad yachtof mechaver av yomar shalihu umala aretz chamas. And then anyone could just grab anything from anyone and say, oh, no, it's mine, and then everyone will be in a constant state of warfare. So what happens? So we have rules about how to act. Not because we know what happened, right? But because we need rules of how to approach reality. Reality is chaotic, right? In order to maintain some order, what we need to do, or what the Torah tells us, is to presume that whoever is in possession owns it. Not because we actually know that he owns it, right? But our rule is we presume that he owns it, right? The presumption is not based on, is not, I should really find out if this is linguistically accurate. But I'd say it's a presumption, not an assumption. Right? We're imposing a certain reality, not because we think it's true, right? But because it's, you know, like a necessary way of dealing with the situation. But because of that, we're presuming that he owns it. Not because we're convinced of that, right? We can't really assume that he owns it, because maybe he doesn't. Right? It's a bad assumption. but we still presume it because we, you know, we have the presumption to say that otherwise life would become unmanageable. Okay? Getting the idea? Meaning one is option to say, look, we have some sort of legal concepts that provide us with like basic evidence or that, you know, belongs to the guy who has it. The other idea that Rabbi Chanan is coming up with right now is that we actually have no idea who owns it. None. None whatsoever. Right? And the fact that he has it really doesn't tell us anything. But we have to act as if we know that he owns it. Okay? Chazaka komash atachas adidat adam shalau inu mitam umdina ubeor shakenu. Right? It's not an evaluation of the situation, right? And we're clarifying that it probably belongs to him. Ela, dvar Torah hu sha'im tzrichim lachos shema inu shalau. You don't have to doubt that he owns it. Right? You're not obligated to think otherwise. He has it, right? You're allowed to presume that he owns it, and you should presume that he owns it, even though, factually, it might totally be false. And we're aware of that. But we still treat it as if he definitely owns it, right? After Masa in a Muvar Arasana, we don't know what really happened. Mikomako Mudin Vada. Right? The din, the law, our legal perspective says, treat it as if he definitely owns it. Why? Because if we were choshesh, shema eno shalau, lo shavkis chay l'chol beria. Right? If we always presumed, or if we always doubted anyone's ownership over everything, right, then society would collapse. So it's not a tool for figuring out the truth. It's a tool for maintaining societal cohesion. Right, society would be unmanageable, right, if people couldn't own things, and that's essentially what would happen, right? If we can't presume that people own what they have, then everyone could always say, "Well, it's really mine." It's kind of a little bit what happens with, with like the idea of like, oh, ownership of land and countries and stuff, because you could always go further back and say, "Well, you know, there was some other group had it, or some other group should have it, or stuff like that." You know, like in America, you can say, well, you know, the Native Americans having like, well, you know, before them, whoever else should have had it. Or like, you know, the same thing in Europe and in Israel and anywhere in the world. Or you could always go back further and claim, you know, that someone else has legal rights to it. And on the other hand, right, if we do that and we keep, you know, saying, well, whoever has possession of it shouldn't have it, you know, then or should have it. Then what are you doing to everyone's rights? So it becomes an infinitely sticky problem. So in terms of like, imagine if that, what's going on in the international arena in terms of like rights to land and rights to resources, etc., were to happen, you know, just like on everybody's block when it comes to like basic possessions. Like let's say, you know, everyone was grabbing each other's car all the time, you know, and you have to like fight off your neighbor with a pointy stick every time you wanted to drive to work because he's like trying to steal your car, right? Or he's claiming that he really deserves your car more than you. So, right, clearly it would just become totally untenable. So we need to be able to say like, okay, we know that like he has possession, these are his possessions and we won't let anyone take it from him. But he's claiming that it's really his and it's really his and et cetera, et cetera. We don't care. We need, right, we need the world to work. We need society to be able to function in a reasonable manner, and therefore we simply impose the presumption of that possession implies ownership, even though it's not really true. Okay, I'm gonna stop here. Continue next time.